This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Heroes for Healthy Pets. We're passionate about your pet's health.
Good day from California. Welcome to the Dr. Courtney Podcast. We have got a good one today. It's going to be amazing. As you can probably guess, my name is Dr. Courtney. I'm a veterinarian, and I co-hosted Pet Talk on Nat Geo Wild. I want to send a big thank you to all of you who are regular listeners, or those of you who are just tuning in for the very first time. Welcome. Well, listen, I don't care where you are. You could be driving, chilling at home, getting a coffee. Thanks so much for joining the podcast, where we get to laugh, love, and learn all about pets. And like I mentioned, you've got a great podcast today. And normally I say that and I'm totally making it up and it's not a good one. But today I'm being serious. We've got an amazing one. And if you've ever been interested in the topic of socialization and a side note of anxiety, you will absolutely want to hear our next guest. It's going to be incredible. And we're going to talk a little bit about social anxiety. Most of us know what it is, but most of us have had it, but we don't really talk about it. We don't really bring it up. And that social anxiety is that feeling where you know you have to go into a crowded room and you're dreading it. Your palms are sweating, your gut is twisting in knots because you know you'll have to go into this room and see people. Yep, just people. It's not like you're going to have to fight for your life. You won't have to give a speech. You're just going in to see people. And it's usually your peers, people who are just like you. And in general, these are people who like you or want to know and want to like you. And it still makes you nervous. And I remember the first day that I started vet school, even though I knew what the student orientation process was going to be like, I was still insanely nervous. And that caught me by surprise because, I mean, sure, meeting all of those smart, talented future veterinarians was a lot to handle, but I was accustomed to handling things. I mean, that was supposed to be my forte. But perhaps failure is what I feared the most. Maybe I wouldn't be able to keep up with my peers. It was just that feeling, that dreading feeling. And what I realized is that I'm not alone. Approximately 15 million American adults experience social anxiety. And it's the third most common mental disorder in the U.S. after depression and alcohol dependence. The symptom, it's just a fear of being evaluated by others with that expectation of assessment. And who knows what you may be feeling. And that's why a little social anxiety is experienced or expected in almost everyone. But strangely, it's not really expected in our pets. We're kind of surprised when a pet is not as friendly as we expect them to be, or they're a little shy in social situations. It's so unexpected, in my opinion, and just what I've seen, that I find people and some pet parents will attribute a pet's shyness to being abused without even knowing any of the pet's history. They see a shy pet and they go, oh, must have been abused when he was younger. And it could be just that dog or cat was poorly socialized. And just to emphasize the point, taking consideration a study done out of University of California, Davis, that studied behavior in adult dogs and based that on the amount of people they were exposed to as puppies. They asked these pet parents, how many people was your dog exposed to? And then they correlated that to fear type behaviors in these adult dogs. Essentially, the question they were attempting to answer was, does exposing your puppy early in life to people lower their level of social anxiety? Now, it's important to remember in dogs, social anxiety is a little bit complicated because you have to think about the anxiety they have towards people and then the anxiety they may have towards other dogs. It's not like on the human side, but that's what they were looking to evaluate. And enough of the suspense. You know what the answer was? 4. That was the magic number. Dogs and puppies had lower fear score, a lower fear behaviors if they were exposed to more than 4 people by 4 to 5 months of age. And dogs who were exposed to less than 4 dogs had higher fear. So the key is they had to be exposed to at least 4 people and at least 4 dogs. And they also showed that in that same study that puppy socialization classes were beneficial because it made the puppies more trainable. So the bottom line is this. Dogs are social creatures, and I won't go as far as to say dogs need their quote-unquote pack, but what I will say is that dogs benefit from being social, and as pet parents, it's our responsibility to kind of celebrate that and nurture that natural inclination to be social. But what is the best way to socialize your puppy? I mean, what are some of the benefits of having a new dog in your house and taking them to a fun, playful facility where they can be social? And most importantly, how do you keep your dog safe while you do that? Well, fortunately today, I have someone who is a real leader in the field of making dogs happy. That's what they're into, the happiness game. And they do that through socialization. And what's great about my next guest is she founded New York Veterinary Practice in 2012. And it's a unique practice model because it's partnered with another business called Biscuits and Bath Doggy Daycare Centers. And there's over 11 locations. And this person is truly special. I'm excited to talk to her. But before we do that, I want to be sure to let everyone out there know how they could get in contact with me. If you have any questions or just things that are ruminating in your head, you can absolutely reach out to me at Dr. Courtney DVM on Twitter or Instagram. Questions with positivity and love will get answered with priority, but not exclusivity. So we will answer just about anything. But right now, let's pause for a few brief moments from a word from a true hero on behalf of pets everywhere. And then let's reconnect on the flip side so I can introduce you to our incredible guest and we can take a deep dive into the world of dog and pet socialization.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Saludos. I'm Dr. Marta Sanchez Emden, owner of Animal Health and Rehab Center and Galloway Animal Hospital, both located in sunny Miami. We successfully rehabilitate disabled patients so they can go on with a good quality of life. We are pioneers in the field of animal rehabilitation and sports medicine in the area of South Florida. We're very proud to be heroes for healthy pets. To learn more about us, visit animalhealthrehab.com. Gracias.
We are back, and I'm super excited to speak with our guest today. I'm excited because I already know that we're going to have a ton to talk about, and it's something that every dog parent out there would love to know more about. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with a doctor that graduated from the Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, completed a pre-med program at Columbia University, and then graduated veterinary school from North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. She then founded New York Veterinary Practice and has over 11 locations. Her philanthropic efforts are simply amazing. She gives free exams and other preventative treatments to service dogs of U.S. veterans, and she's partnered with Combat Wounded Coalition and SUDS, which is Soldiers Undertaking Disabled Scuba. And if that wasn't enough, she also supports a veterinary hospital in Afghanistan. She's incredible, and I'm privileged to have her on the podcast today. Podcast listeners, please join me in welcoming Dr. Yasmin Mortsakis to the show. Welcome, Dr. Mortsakis. How are you doing?
Thank you. Thanks. That's quite an introduction. Thank you. I'm very excited to be doing this today. And of course, this is, you know, near and dear to my heart about socialization. So this is a great topic and something I don't think we talk enough about as veterinarians. So
you're completely right. And I actually wanted to talk to you about a veterinarian's role in terms of socialization, because I know that a lot of people utilize the services of dog trainers and those sorts of things. And I kind of wanted to talk to you about that, but I'm naturally differential. So I want to call you Dr. Mortsakis. Can I call you Dr. Yasmin?
Yeah, that's fine. Absolutely. Of course.
Oh, fantastic, Dr. Yasmin. Oh, this is great. We're getting comfortable, but before we get more comfortable, could you do us a favor and everybody out there and do something we call set the scene? And set the scene basically means you give us a sort of a vivid picture of what it was like kind of growing up, what region of the country you grew up in, and if it was a rural or city environment, and your contact with pets and kind of how you developed a love for animals.
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in Manhattan in New York City on the Upper East Side, but, you know, had tons of pets, sort of rescued lots of kittens, and we had hermit crabs and snakes and gerbils and all sorts of different animals coming in and out of the house. And
kittens and hermit crabs. That's a great start.
Oh, it was I felt bad for my parents because anything that needed a home came home. Any pet that, you know, was the class pet when school still had a class pet would come home for the holidays, and, you know, sort of keeping the gerbils and the cats and everybody safe and separate was interesting. But
yes.
Yeah. And then I sort of cliche, you know, I think a lot of people who, you know, have a love for animals, it starts when you're young. And And I sort of ended up not going that route initially, and went into international relations and marketing, and then decided that really didn't fit what I wanted to do. And I made a career change sort of a little bit later and went back to vet school and loved it and haven't looked back since. So it's been great for me. And now I'm back in New York. So I went to school in North Carolina, thought I might want to be interested in a little bit of horse medicine, and then changed my mind, moved back to the city, and now primarily work with dogs. But you know, we see cats and some other animals as well.
But you don't see miniature horses.
No miniature horses yet, okay. But you know, we're not ruling it out. We'll see whatever.
All options are on the table. You know, when I was going through vet school, I had a real sort of divergent path, a true binary choice, because my two favorite species were canine and bovine. So basically dogs and cows. Yep. And I was like, I can't have an all dog cow practice. I've got to make a choice. So it's hard, get it 100%. My interesting question, you mentioned that you had an international relations and marketing focus initially, mm-hmm. and then you changed course. My course has always been very science-based. I flirted with the idea of becoming a radiologist, but then I transitioned to surgery. But it always kind of stayed in that veterinary medicine science realm. I guess what I'm very interested to know is, do you find now in your professional career that there are any parallels or connections to your previous training in international relations and marketing and currently what you're doing?
I mean, I think for me currently what I'm doing, because I own the practice and we do a lot of marketing and we reach out to people and we're doing other things other than just, you know, the veterinary medicine piece of it, it's been very helpful for me to have that business background. And I like both of them. So, I love the science and I'm a definite medicine geek and could talk medicine all day long. But, you know, I also enjoy the marketing aspect and the business aspect. So for me, it really ties both of those kind of passions together and keeps me excited every day. So it's been great.
Well, this is great. You have one geek talking to another. This is exactly what I always dreamed of. You know, you talked about the marketing aspects, and that your marketing aspects have been nothing short of incredible. There's over 11 locations, I'm sure, just by in the time that we've been talking thus far, you opened up another location.
We are next week. We'll have 12.
See, you think I'm telling jokes, but it's the truth. You're opening literally as you're talking to me, you're opening locations. Yeah. Describe to me the proliferation of Biscuits in Bath and how you've been so successful spreading throughout New York.
So it's been a very interesting sort of business model. Biscuits in Bath has been around for about 25 years. And I think, you know, I remember when they opened their first location, it was down the block from where I grew up. And everybody was sort of like, what's a doggy gym? What is that? And people didn't really understand the concept of dogs like to be with other dogs. And this is a great idea for city environments where they don't get to run around freely and meet other dogs. And so it caught on from one location. Then Biscuits opened about 5 or 6 other locations. And then they brought me on about in 2011 to sort of meet a need of, you know, while the dogs are here, there's lots of care that they need. And so the vet piece kind of got tied into the socialization piece, which, you know, they go hand in hand. So it's this very symbiotic relationship. There's a bunch of dogs playing together and you want to keep everybody healthy and up to date on vaccinations and all sorts of other things that they can transmit to other dogs. So you want a healthy population so that the dogs can come here, interact, get social, and be as safe as possible. So they brought me on in 2011 and it worked. So we did this incredible business model where we partnered with them and we provide vet care exclusively for the pets that come here, as well as other pets that can come in and see us as well. And it's just taking off because I think the idea is that I think a lot of people want their dog to socialize with other dogs and they're at work, you know, 10 hours a day. And the idea of leaving your pet at home for 10 hours is a little bit sad.
Of course.
I think a lot of people think, why am I getting a dog if I'm leaving them home the whole time? So it's, you know, taken off tremendously because there's all sorts of different things that they can do. So if they're not very social, they can come in and play for a few hours. If it's an older dog, they come in and play for a few hours because a full day for an older dog might be too much. So there's a variety of different options. Some dogs just want to walk with a few other dogs and then go home, and we do it all. So it's tailored to the dog and their personality.
Perfect. That's absolutely perfect, particularly when you mention their personality. I mean, listen, I'm a grown man. I don't like being left home for 10 hours in the day. So, I mean, I can only imagine what a dog feels. And you mentioned doggy gym. What I love about what you're saying is it's almost like Willy Wonka's factory for dogs, where there's everything there for them. There's, you know, fun, but then they also get their health care. I left off Willy Wonka's chocolate factory because I don't want dogs getting chocolate, right? So I had to take that word out, but you know what I mean. In that it just seems like a one-stop shop. Do you find that people really enjoy the level of care that they get, but then have any voice to you that they also like that convenience?
Well, the convenience is a huge factor, and nowadays everybody wants convenience. So you want everything sort of in one place, and you want it as easy as possible. And I think what they like about it too is it's really tailored to the individual dog. So as much as we want all our dogs to be social all the time, and you were talking about social anxiety, not all dogs had that beginning. Not all dogs feel super social. And so what I like about it is it really looks at the individual dogs, and if they want to play all day, that's great. And if they don't, there's options for that as well. Because I think a lot of owners think, oh, my dog's not social, so there's no other option for that dog. They, you know, they're home alone. And that's not the case at all. There's so many different options if you just look at that dog individually and what that dog's needs are and not try to sort of fit it into a mold that's there. You mold yourself to the dog and what their personality is.
That's absolutely key. And I like the fact that we're reinforcing the idea that all dogs are individuals, all have separate personalities. And my parents' generation, a lot of them felt that dogs were fairly homogenous in their behavior and the way that they talk, to put it nicely. And the idea that every dog has a personality just as individualistic as humans, it's so heartening to hear that. And what I like the most, too, is that you tailor the social experience based on not only personality, but also health considerations and health concerns. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular health concerns that you see with some degree of regularity that cause you to change or adjust the level of socialization?
I mean, I think for us, you know, our two most common things that we see are age groups that we see, you know, the puppies. So the puppies really have certain needs depending on where they are in their vaccination schedule, how old they are, what vaccines they've gotten, that sort of thing. So those programs are really tailored for exactly where they are in their vaccine schedule to keep them as healthy as possible. So they can't walk outside at a certain point. They're kept with dogs that are in sort of a similar age range, that sort of thing. And then the other thing we see a lot of is with, you know, our geriatric dogs, our aging dogs that need other specific healthcare needs. And whether that's, you know, extra downtime or slower, more frequent walks, because I like to say motion is lotion for these older dogs.
Absolutely.
So, you know, getting them out there and walking them, they can't do those 30-minute walks anymore, but they could do 10-minute walks more frequently throughout the day. They need different bedding when they're sleeping at night. So, you know, those sorts of things, I think those are the two most groups that we see that we really tailor a lot to. And then, you know, dogs that are very anxious might work with a trainer a little bit more or in a smaller group setting rather than going on to a big play field where there's, you know, 10, 15 dogs. They might work with one or two dogs for a few weeks until they get more acclimated to being around other dogs. So
that's perfect.
You know, there's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, someone asks you a simple question like, why do you feel socialization is important? A lot of people may feel like that's just an ordinary sort of perfunctory pro forma question. But honestly, it can literally be life or death for a lot of dogs. I mean, more dogs are likely to lose their lives due to behavioral problems than infectious disease. And it turns out that the number one cause of euthanasia in healthy animals is behavioral problems. You know, over 2 million dogs a year are euthanized because of behavioral problems. I guess my question to you is, why do you feel like socialization is so important, even from something that's very obvious like exercise to something not so obvious like social anxiety? What are some things that you've actually seen or heard from other pet parents that show you the benefits of being in that social environment?
I mean, for me, you know, it's always heartbreaking when somebody wants to give up a pet because of a behavioral issue, because to me, I feel like these are things that we can change, we can help with, we can work with. And so I feel like the sooner we get on that, the younger the dog is, the sooner we're socializing them, even if it's just walking them around the block in a bag because they're too young to go down on the street yet, but they're hearing the sights and the sounds and the noises. You know, I've seen a lot of pets been rehomed or given up because they're scared of walking down the street and an owner doesn't find that practical and can't handle that sort of behavior living in the city environment. So for me, you know, it's almost at the crux of wellness care, because we're all about preventative care and wellness care. And I think a lot of times the socialization and the behavioral part gets sort of shifted to the side. And it's so important, as you said, most of these dogs are being euthanized in these shelters because of behavioral issues. And it's something to me that we can get on early, and early intervention is key in terms of socializing these dogs so they don't feel so anxious and they're great companions.
I think when we see certain breeds walk through the door, you know, we have, not to be breedist, but we certainly have these preconceived notions. Oh, yeah. Boy, I see a chow or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, are there certain breeds that pop into your head that you say, okay, this particular breed or this particular dog may need a little bit more of a hands-on approach for socialization, or maybe the opposite, maybe a little bit more hands-off approach and give them their distance?
Well, I mean, I do think, you know, not to be breedist, but I do think there are certain breeds that sort of a little bit more predisposed to, you know, maybe some Chihuahuas are a little bit more land sharky than other dogs. But, you know, I think it's important to research what breed you're getting before you do that, because I think that's another reason people rehome dogs or give them up, is that they're expecting sort of a different thing from a breed, and certain breeds are known to do certain things. You know, I think the bigger dogs, I think if you're going to have a bigger dog, training is very important and socialization is very important, because it's a lot different to have, you know, 150-pound dog sort of being a little bit unruly on a leash or walking or barking or being leash reactive than a 20-pound golden doodle on a leash. Particularly for me in a city environment, we're talking about dogs getting in and out of elevators with other people. It can cause, you know, friction in a building between neighbors and things like that. So I think, you know, certainly if you have a larger breed dog, getting them socialized and into training and classes is important.
Wow. It's just that infrastructure image and visual that you gave us is perfect, because a lot of us out in California are thinking about sun and the beach and open areas. And here you are talking about buildings and elevators and stuff like that. Yeah. And it just reminds me of a beautiful Bouvier that I met last week, who the pet parent, she was approximately 84 years old and she was about 5'1". And this Bouvier is like, you know, one of the healthiest, strongest Bouviers that you've ever met, could literally pull an ox cart. And unfortunately, the poor guy wasn't well trained. And so he's pulling her all over the place. And that can be a serious health concern in an octogenarian, being pulled all over the road, all over the sidewalk. And so I think some of the points you bring up in terms of making sure that these large breed dogs, these stronger dogs, headstrong or physically strong dogs, are well trained. I want to talk to you about a veterinarian's role in terms of socialization and training. But what I'd like to do right now is just pause for a brief break, and then on the flip side, we'll reconnect. You'll stay with us, Dr. Yasmin?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back, right after we kibble a little with our sponsors.
It's not just a sneeze. It could be the pathway to disease. Your dog is at risk for contracting dog flu. That's why it's important to vaccinate your dog for dog flu. Get your dog vaccinated today. Visit dogflu.com for more information.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
All right, we're back. We're talking with Dr. Yasmin Mortsakis. Just incredible conversation. Founder of New York Veterinary Practice, started all the way back in 2012 and partnered with Biscuits and Bath, and has over 11 locations. And we just have breaking news. She's opening a 12th location next week. So it's been absolutely scintillating conversation. We've been talking a lot about anxiety, socialization, and how important it is to have your dogs in a social environment. We know dogs benefit from social environments. We know it lowers fear, lowers odd behaviors, and of course the exercise component. It cannot be understated just how valuable it is. You know, I wanted to ask you, Dr. Yasmin, a lot of people utilize dog trainers because they tend to be very ubiquitous. I mean, I think that if I was looking for help in terms of how to train my dog, how to socialize my dog, there would be potentially a dog trainer right around the corner. I just wanted to ask you, what do you feel a veterinarian's role is in helping to give cogent behavioral advice and to help with the process of socialization?
I mean, I think it's a partnership working with the trainers. I mean, I think we get the dogs a lot earlier. You know, they might not go to a trainer until they're a little bit older, maybe 4 or 5 months. And I think it's important to get them to the trainer earlier. So for me,
sorry to interrupt, but maybe you were just about to lead into this. But in your opinion, what is the ideal time for a puppy to be socialized?
I mean, I think they can start at 7 to 8 weeks. Now, that doesn't mean that they're walking out on the street, because we know that they need to be fully vaccinated. But they can be around dogs that are at their current same vaccine status. They can, you know, come into a doggy daycare and they stay with dogs that are in that vaccine status. I think it's really important for new puppies. I know they can't walk on the street, but get a carrier, walk them out and around, let them smell the sights and sounds of your environment. So even if it's not in a city environment, put them in the car, drive them around, let them get used to all of that. And so I think you can start as early as seven, 8 weeks.
Yes,
you
know, particularly for the car rides. I love that, because for a lot of dogs, the only time they're getting a car ride is when they're going to the vet. Then they wonder, why is my dog so anxious when they're in a car?
Exactly. And sometimes it takes them a few rides that, you know, they get motion sickness, but then they get over it. So, you know, the earlier the better, I think. As long as, you know, and that's where the veterinarian can play a role, because I think that's where the safety concerns come in, and we can sort of guide pet parents to say, this is when you can be walking them outside. This is when they can go meet other dogs. And that's a very important role, because I can't tell you how many people I get in and the puppies are 8 weeks old and they're walking on the city streets. And so we sort of have to coach a little bit of what's safe, what's not, when can they do what things, you know, just like a kid.
Yeah, for sure. Just like a kid. And that's, you know, certainly what I think it's important to know, that that's what a lot of people are thinking these days. And that connection, that emotional connection they have with their pets, is very similar to their child. And what I love the most is that you mentioned safety. That's the key here, is because when we have our pet and our pet parents, the one thing that they want more than anything else besides socialization and great behavioral practices is that they just want their pets to be safe. And I wanted to ask you, from a veterinarian standpoint, in one of the most heavily socialized areas of any veterinary practice, are there any potential health concerns that you think of as a veterinarian? I was recently following, if we're speaking about breaking news, the fact that there's been a proliferation of dog flu that's spreading across certain regions of the country. How important do you feel vaccination is in keeping these dogs safe in social situations?
I mean, for me, it's, you know, almost paramount that prevention is key. So we don't want to be on the back end of treating a dog that has an upper respiratory or has flu, particularly when we know the vaccines work and they work well. But again, you don't want to do it in the middle of the outbreak. You want to do it before the outbreak happens. And so, you know, I think that's really important. We tailor vaccine schedules for puppies when they come in, and for older dogs if it's the first time we've seen them. And for me, you know, even if they don't go to a doggy daycare, you know, I argue that New York City is a highly social environment. No matter what the dog is doing, they're seeing the doorman, they're getting biscuits from the doorman, who's now touched 7 or 8 other dogs before they've touched your dog. And so, you know, you might not think about the flu, but the third dog that the doorman touched might have had the flu, and now that saliva is still on his hand. He's feeding biscuits to your dog. And if your dog's not vaccinated, your dog's at risk. So getting the vaccines for me is super important, not just the flu vaccine, but, you know, some other pretty important vaccines in this area. Kennel cough vaccine is very important. Obviously, rabies, distemper, parvo, and in the city, we really talk about the lepto vaccine a lot, which is a bacteria, you know, primarily transmitted through rodent urine. And so in Manhattan, you know, seeing rodent urine is not unusual. You might not even see it, but it's there.
Yes, if you're seeing rats carrying a slice of pizza, then there's guaranteed to be some rodent urine.
I mean, they're hanging out, they're everywhere. So for me, those vaccines are very important, you know, and then we discuss sort of some other vaccines, depending on the lifestyle. In the Northeast, Lyme vaccine is crucial as well. But, you know, for our environment too, there's a little bit of, you know, a social component in terms of social responsibility. So the more dogs that are vaccinated, the healthier the population is here in our doggy daycare, which keeps everybody healthy. So that's ideally what we want.
No doubt, particularly because I think what vaccines highlight and what you're highlighting is that it's not just about your dog. right? Mm-hmm. And so if your dog is not vaccinated and never comes in contact with an infectious disease, well, then your dog may be safe. But by not vaccinating your dog, it's potentially putting other dogs or the entire population at risk. And I certainly have heard some really tragic scenarios in Ohio and Wisconsin and even in California about entire daycare centers being shut down. Yeah. Because of these large outbreaks. And I'll be honest with you, if you shut down for a week or two and you do that three times, the third time you come back, you may not have a business.
Yeah. And it spreads so rapidly through those environments that, you know, getting on top of it once it starts is difficult, to say the least. And so really kind of making sure that your population is vaccinated is, for me, very, very important. And not just vaccines too. Like, so, you know, the other thing that I want, you know, people will say, oh, my dog doesn't go outside. I don't need heartworm prevention. And so again, here's another topic of preventative medicine. Well, it's a lot easier to put them on the preventative, and mosquitoes are everywhere. So even if they don't go outside, there could be a mosquito in the hallway, in your apartment, whatever. So, and then those dogs, you know, the more dogs we're preventing with heartworm disease, there's not reservoirs for this disease to keep growing and growing. You know, those are other preventative measures that I feel sort of are near and dear to me.
Yeah, no, listen, and what I think is important is that we explain the risk. And I've certainly seen a mosquito when I was growing up in Connecticut in my house in the middle of the wintertime. So All it takes is one mosquito to transmit heartworm. And now your dog is affected. And what people don't realize is that obviously the treatment of heartworm is so harsh. Your dog has to be given a poison to get rid of it. And the expense and the pain and the hospitalization required, I think prevention is key. One other aspect about prevention I wanted to ask you about is if I could just jump back for just a split second back to training, just because I'm sure just in your career, you have had a sort of greatest hits of behavioral questions that you get. And if you wouldn't mind, and again, just anything that you have heard in terms of behavior, what's one of the most common questions you get in regards to dog behavior from pet parents?
I mean, the one I get sort of almost every time is, should I let my dog sleep on the bed? And this one always kind of cracks me up because, you know, do I crate train? Do they sleep on the bed? Where do I put them? How do they sleep? What do I do when they're sleeping?
What you type know, of mattress should they have?
No, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the sleeping on the bed is always funny to me because I, you know, sort of am like, well, whatever decision you make, it's going to be the decision. You're not going to be able to untrain that behavior. So if you want them sleeping on the bed for the rest of that dog's life, then that's great. But
that's such a great
point.
Don't
2 years into it, you're going to be able to make them sleep on the floor because it's not going to happen.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, because if you're single now and your dog is sitting with you, for whatever reason, you are not single anymore, your dog's not going to be happy with
it. Exactly. And then, you know, untraining these behaviors. So, you know, but the crate training is a big one with puppies. You know, do I crate train my dog? Do I not crate train my dog? And then we get other interesting questions about, you know, why is my dog scooting? Why does my dog want to eat its own poop? Those sort of behavioral questions come into play.
Right, right. And is there a lot of people may ask about preventing destructive behavior or soiling in the house and things like that?
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for people who may be seeing their dog engaging in destructive behavior in the house?
So, I mean, a couple of things. I think that in terms of the destructive behavior, I think there's a reason behind it. So either they're bored, they're not getting enough exercise, or something is behind most of the destructive behavior. I mean, some of it's just puppies being puppies, but, you know, as a dog gets a little older and they engage in destructive behavior, some of it's even anxiety based. So I think, you know, bringing it to your veterinarian's attention is really important because there's usually something else behind it. Sometimes it can even be something systemic that's going on. I've seen dogs sort of get destructive and they've got, you know, a urinary tract infection or bladder stones or something that's causing them discomfort. And they're, you know, engaging now in a behavior that they didn't used to.
Even joint pain can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I think, you know, also being consistent with them, you know, in terms of soiling in the house, you know, if you're not consistent of when you're taking them out or when their walks are and things like that, I think that can be confusing. So being as consistent as possible when you're trying to do training with your pet.
When a pet parent takes their pet to one of your facilities, your practice, and they're at the gym and they're having fun, you know, do you feel, what's some of the sort of highlights that you talk to pet parents about in terms of a well-exercised dog and the benefits that that dog experiences?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, exercise is great. So we know that obesity in pets is on the rise and it's a big health concern. And so the more exercise an animal gets, the healthier it's going to be. It's not as prone to be obese if you're feeding the right way and all of those things. I think tired dogs, when they come home, are great. You know, they're there and they're not engaging in destructive behaviors. They're tired, they're resting, they're, you know, excited to be home, but they've had a great day. So, you know, we always say a tired dog is a well-behaved dog, but, you know, it's kind of true. I have four dogs, and so, and they come every day.
That's
but
amazing.
I know when I leave them home and they don't come to play, they're not as easy at home. You know, they're little bouncing off the wall. So I think, you know, the energy is great for them. And again, as we talked about with the older dogs, I think the exercise is great for these older dogs too, because they can tend to be sedentary when they're at home. And when they're not at home and they're in these environments, they're getting up and they're, even if they're just walking around for 5 minutes and then they sit back down, they're getting up and they're moving and they're interacting. And I think that's great. And I think there's a social aspect too of dogs like to be with other dogs for the most part. And so, you know, the dogs, we have a big ramp and they see their friends going down the ramp and their tails are wagging and they're very excited to come in and sort of see their friends. So I think that's great.
Of course. Hey, who doesn't like seeing their friends? And I think you're 100% correct. Canine obesity, or just obesity in pets, is something that we are really, is really under-recognized and under-treated, and people are just not aware of it. When you think about the fact that you're now going to be starting 12 locations, and you look at all of the happy dogs all over New York and that come into your facilities every day, and the pet parents whose lives are being enriched by this experience, when you look at all of that in total, what's the one thing that you seem to be the most proud of throughout your career?
I mean, for me, what I love about it's a very different relationship since I've been here, you know, with New York Vet Practice. I see these dogs every day. And so sort of this continuity of care. And it's even beyond compliance, because we do a lot of the medications here for the owners and things like that. But it's really just seeing them on a day-to-day basis. We catch things a lot earlier. And as we know, prevention is really the key, you know, getting on top of these things before they happen, having discussions with owners about, you know, joint supplements for their dogs before they're super arthritic and things like that. So that's what it's been really special for me, is just having a very different bond with the pets that I see. Instead of seeing them maybe two or three times a year, I see them almost every week, you know, even if it's just that I'm passing them by while they're playing, I'm taking a look at them. And I love that. I love that connection. So that's been very exciting. And then the rescue work we do is very near and dear to my heart. So that's, you know, the other thing.
Yeah, listen, that's another thing that we could talk about for hours is your your work that you do with the U.S. servicemen and your philanthropic efforts in Afghanistan as well. Could you just briefly tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So Combat Wounded Coalition, we partnered with them, and basically we offer free wellness vet services to any veterans or active service members that have service dogs. So we do their vaccines, blood work, preventative medicine, all of that's for free if they come in. So we've been working to get that off the ground a little bit more than it's been, but it's been great. And then NAWSAD is a animal rescue group that's in Kabul in Afghanistan, and it's pretty interesting. It's the only veterinary hospital in Afghanistan. And very interestingly, they've got female veterinarians on staff, which is amazing. We do some philanthropic work with them. But what's been really very interesting is we do Skype conversations with them and consult on some cases that they may have questions about. So it's gotten our doctors very involved in doing some different cases that we don't necessarily see over here. And we kind of help back and forth with them. So it's been very interesting.
Wow, this is just incredible. From New York to Afghanistan, you are just reaching far and wide. I feel like I can talk to you all day, Dr. Mortzak.
I know, this has been great.
It's been absolutely incredible. And the only thing I could ask you at this point is, if you wouldn't mind, because there's so much we could talk about, if you wouldn't mind one day just doing a part two, because we could take a deep dive into so many other topics. You don't mind?
Anytime. Anytime. I could talk medicine with you all day long.
Oh, this is beautiful. This is absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for taking your time to join the podcast. And I look forward to talking with you again sometime.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, folks, that was incredible. Absolutely incredible. Dr. Yasmin Mortzakis, New York Veterinary Practice and partners with Biscuits and Bath. Absolutely energizing, inspiring, and scintillating conversation just in regards to socialization, how to minimize anxiety. And the one thing that I think what I love she emphasized was that connection, that foundation. because it always starts with love, you know, and when you start with love, it creates the urge or the impetus to do all of those other things and help your dogs and cats have fun. So this is perfect. I love the conversation. I ask all the podcast listeners to join me for the next episode of the Dr. Courtney Show. It's going to be great, and I really appreciate it. Please remember, always take care of your pets, and there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.